When Fox News paid out nearly $1 billion to Dominion, I thought, surely somebody's going to have to take the fall here. But I didn't think it would be Tucker Carlson. Yet here we are, the channel's biggest star is out for reasons not quite yet explained. And then there's the probably bigger but less surprising news. Biden is running for 2024, officially. A week is a long time in politics, and this has felt very long indeed. Here to make it a bit more concise for the Bunker USA is our regular American news oracle, Julie Norman, co-director of UCL Center on US Politics. Julie, welcome back to the Bunker USA.
Thank you. Always great to be here.
Julie, Tucker Carlson, what the hell has happened?
Well, as you said, no one really saw this coming, like least of all Tucker himself. I mean, he had signed off his Friday night show saying, we'll see you Monday. And then he did not see us Monday. So this did happen very quickly. There's still, I think, some, you know, confusion, lack of clarity around exactly what tipped things for Fox. Obviously, Tucker Carlson has been controversial for quite a while. He said inflammatory things on his show. Some, you know, advertisers have pulled out. Some of his text messages came to light in the lead up to the trial. So he hasn't been without controversy. But through all of that, his ratings were super high. He had 3 million viewers a night, the highest in cable news ratings, you know, really was kind of the standard bearer for Fox. We've heard just in the last 24 hours or so, the Wall Street Journal reported that just on the eve of the trial, some additional private messages from Tucker Carlson, really speaking directly about Fox executives in very offensive terms, came to light. And that seems to be what tip things finally for Fox, allegedly. Using the C word to describe different executives, amongst other things, is one thing that I've heard. So again, the details are not particularly public, but that's what we kind of know till now.
Does it feel weirdly like it's all internal matters then? It's kind of, he was allowed to do anything he wanted externally, and then even cost Fox News more than $700 million partially to blame for that. But then it's now internal politics of what tips it over the edge rather than anything external.
That's what it seems to be, because again, the things that he has said on his show that he has gotten pushback for in the past, you know, from, you know, comments he's made about immigrants to, you know, different kinds of things on gender and whatnot, all of those I think Fox was kind of okay with. They played very well to the audiences. He again was doing well for Fox, so I think they kind of let that go. It really did seem to be these internal things that were very soon to become public as well that I think tipped the balance for Fox.
I think people hope that Fox being punished like this will make Fox News change, but is this whole situation kind of indicative of the fact that that's probably not likely? Because as you say, they don't really care what people say on air. They care if they upset executives within the building. And that's a really quite horrible, confused logic to have there, but to me indicates that the programming probably isn't going to develop very much after this.
Yeah, I think looking at the Tucker case itself, it seems to look that way. I will say the larger settlement between Fox and Dominion last week is an interesting one. I don't think we'll see any kind of massive shift in Fox coverage, but the fact that they did have to pay out that huge settlement, the fact that they're facing another lawsuit now, it will be interesting, I guess, to see if that changes a little bit of how the network approaches some of the claims that they know are false in the future, or at least how they frame them. So I'm not expecting any major signs, but it was a win, I think, for Dominion with that settlement. And quite frankly, just a win for people who want the media to be a little bit more accountable for some of the spreading of misinformation.
How does Tucker's exit change the political landscape of America on the whole?
It is massive. I mean, the influence that he had was absolutely wild. And this was at all levels. First, when Trump was president is really when Tucker came into his prime and had that real moment of popularity. And I would say he in some way had this feedback loop with Fox and with Trump and with Tucker in particular, where things that Tucker would say, then President Trump would very much latch onto and bring into the White House and bring into policy. Even after Trump left office, Tucker has very much had the ear of Republican lawmakers, especially in the House, and very much their constituents. The Washington Post reported an interesting anecdote this morning that when Boris Johnson was in Washington, D.C., obviously back in the day, but trying to raise support for the war in Ukraine and kept meeting with House Republican members. So many of them kept saying to him, sorry, I can't cross Tucker Carlson. He's saying we shouldn't be supporting Ukraine. And apparently Johnson had to ask one, who is this Tucker Carlson everyone's talking about? But like, that was like the level of influence that at least anecdotally he had. And even if certain lawmakers weren't particularly swayed, they would just say they would get volumes of emails, letters, direct protests from people who were watching Tucker's show, and then coming to them with those issues and grievances the next day. And so his show, his monologue in particular, really did have a very firm impact, very direct impact on everyone from individual voters all the way up to the top.
Do you see any possibility of him going full bore into politics? You know, could there be Tucker 2024?
You know, it is honestly a really interesting and somewhat concerning possibility. But if you ask me honestly, like one person who would maybe challenge Trump would be someone like Tucker Carlson. And I think now that he would be coming at it from kind of the back foot after this ousting from Fox would make it a little bit more difficult. But he is one person that, you know, others have raised this before, that if he were to throw his hat in the ring at some point, he would arguably have a lot of the same attributes that brought Trump up, would fit him, but arguably with someone who is much even smarter and savvier in how he goes about talking about issues. So I would not put it out of the realm of possibility, even though I don't see it something that's happening in the immediate future.
Yeah, because he's a lot younger than Trump. So in terms of that matchup against, we'll speak about Biden shortly, but that age disparity there would give him a bit of an advantage there, it would seem to me as well.
Yeah, definitely a Tucker versus any Democrat would be quite a contest. And I think he would have massive support behind him. I think the tougher thing for him right now was, would he go up against Trump, who, again, the two of them have, you know, kind of been parallel in their ascendancy during that late 2010s period. And even though some of Tucker's, you know, comments about Trump this last month that came to light with the trial were not as positive, I think still that synergy that they have, I'm not sure he would be ready to cross Trump just yet, or that Trump voters would exactly know what to do with that.
What about wider political allies in Trump world? What does this mean for your Marjorie Taylor Greens and Lauren Boberts of the world and Matt Gaetzes? These people who have completely established their career by being allies of Carlson and being constantly thrown on Fox News. What does this mean for them?
Yeah, I'm not sure this will change things massively for them, honestly, because Fox is still there and a lot of the other stalwarts at Fox are still there and are going to keep giving airtime, giving the focus to some of the leading MAGA candidates and representatives. So they will still have their time on air, their moments in the sun, and I think they will kind of ride with whoever's there at the moment. And so I don't think this will be like a deal breaker for them. But again, the influence that those individuals might have on them, though, might be a little bit more muted than Tucker's reach.
Tucker Carlson, he put out this statement on Friday about what's gone on there. And it felt really strange to me because it felt like he was having a kind of deep state conspiracy theory about Fox News itself. Is there a risk for Fox News here that Tucker Carlson is so influential that he could kind of turn Fox News into an entity of this kind of whatever you want to describe it as, that's quashing conservatives? And does that pose a risk? Because I think the replacement value of Tucker Carlson is one thing. I think you could put me in Tucker Carlson's slot and loads of people would watch it because it's the best slot on Fox News. But Tucker Carlson having a go at Fox News in that way, can that actually damage their brand?
Yeah, I'm not sure that it will. I mean, any time that we've seen similar kind of individual ousting from Trump, I mean, Bill O'Reilly is kind of the go-to example of this. He didn't really take much viewership with him, you know, and people still stayed loyal to Fox even after he left. So as big as Tucker was, I'm not sure that he is bigger than the brand of Fox. And it'll be interesting to see where those loyalties fall. But my sense is that the network itself is very savvy about keeping their viewers. Some of their other shows are, you know, rivaling in popularity to Tucker Carlson's, like The Five and ones like that. So I think they'll still keep their viewership, even though their viewers will likely be sympathetic to Carlson. And, obviously many of them sad to see him go.
Something that's gone under the radar a little bit because of how much focus has been on Tucker Carlson is Don Lemon is out at CNN as well. Does that mean very much, or does it actually just really highlight the fact that it doesn't mean very much? And that indicates how Democrats and the left just aren't really as good at gaining attention in the way that the right wing is.
Yeah, the Don Lemon ousting, I do think, is notable. I think you're right. It would have gotten a lot more attention if it wasn't in the same week and even day as Tucker and whatnot. I will say, you know, Don Lemon, I think he obviously had his individual brand, but was seen a bit more as part of the CNN ecosystem. Yeah. And I would say not quite that same individual stardom as Tucker, or that individual influence on policymakers as Tucker. But with that said, it is a major shakeup at CNN. It's something that, again, was unexpected. You know, seems to come somewhat from some comments he made several months ago, but there wasn't, you know, any immediate action taken then. So I do think these shakeups are notable, but the Tucker one certainly stands out as probably more influential, at least politically.
Yeah, is it the kind of power dynamic there, that Don Lemon has a power dynamic because he had a lot of access to politicians and lawmakers on the left, but he doesn't have that same influence? Whereas for Tucker Carlson, it's more that the policymakers are desperate for his attention, in a way that maybe on the left, people want to go on Don Lemon's show, but he actually requires the attention of them more so.
Yeah, I think that overall that's fair. I mean, again, I wouldn't understate this kind of feedback loop again that Fox and some of the MAGA lawmakers have had. With CNN, I would say that media landscape is just a lot broader. Yeah. So you have a lot of different media outlets who are, you know, often engaging in different things. And there's not, I would say, you know, feedback loops happen everywhere, but it's not that direct one-to-one that we saw between Fox and Tucker in particular, and lawmakers that we see with, you know, CNN or Don Lemon as one of many voices, you know, kind of covering more left-leaning angles on politics. And likewise, I don't see as many left-leaning politicians looking for that endorsement, so to speak, from Don Lemon as you would see right-wing looking for endorsement from Tucker.
So now on to the more substantial news, I would say, but less surprising, and something else which seems to have got maybe less attention. Biden is officially in for 2024. How has that gone down?
Yes, so he's officially in. The suspense and the wait is over. I will say, you know, it is important and notable, I think, that it is official now. It's also interesting just how he framed and launched this debate. He released it as a 3-minute video, which is what we kind of expect and what he said that he was going to do. But the framing of the message was very much setting the stage that this is still an election for the soul of America, for freedom, for democracy, very much that framing. And I think it does position Biden to frame the election as a choice between him and Trump or Trump-like candidates, as opposed to simply a referendum on himself, which does, I think, help Biden going into 2024.
Yeah, I thought it was a really well done video. And I always find it astonishing when I look at these American politicians' videos and then look at the kind of ones that are made by our politicians over here in the UK. And they're so much better. They're so much slicker. But I did find it strange that it was kind of forward looking, but it also felt like he might as well just use the same video used in 2020. Really, it felt like the exact same line. Did that feel sort of weirdly that it's looking to the future, but quite dated at the same time?
Yeah, I think you said it's a really tough balance for him to hit that is still saying a lot of the problems and the challenges and these real like urgent questions about the future of the country that we faced in 2020 are still on the table now. And yet at the same time, look at all the progress that I've made during my time in office. So it's tough to kind of give that double message. And I think, you know, his closing line in this video is, let's get the job done. So I think that's what he's going to keep falling back on, is saying, look, like, we've made progress, but we're not out of the woods yet. So stick with me a little bit longer so we can kind of get past this new seeming crisis in U.S. democracy and whatnot. But I think as the campaign picks up, it'll be a little bit harder, I think, for him to toggle between those two messages. Yeah. But it's just something that he's going to have to do.
Yeah, does it feel like he's almost slightly embarrassed by some of the accomplishments of the administration? Let me explain a little bit what I mean there. But it's done a lot. I feel like he's done a lot in these past couple of years. But when it comes to pitching himself to America, everything he's done plays really well to his base. And it's great to get his base back on side. And I'm sure they're really happy with it. But then when he's on the front foot and trying to pitch to more people, it feels almost like he doesn't want to talk about those things because maybe it might put off those people in the middle and those kind of swing voters in between. So is he almost having to be slightly ashamed of saying what he's done in case that puts off people who are maybe more conservative when it comes to spending, for example?
Yeah, so this is a good question, because I would say Biden obviously ran the first time around as a moderate, bipartisan, peacemaker, this kind of thing, but then ended up in his first 2 years being quite, I wouldn't say progressive on all issues, but definitely liberal in terms of spending. So passing like, trillions of dollars worth in federal spending, first on the COVID relief, then on the infrastructure, and then on the package that finally passed on climate and healthcare. So in terms of spending, Democrats like a lot of the provisions that were there, and many others like it too. But in terms of dollar signs and numbers, it's big, and he knows he's going to get hit from the right by, trying to position him as a big spender, as a real, very liberal progressive. And when he's trying to keep riding that moderate, calm, no drama kind of character into another election, I think we'll see him trying to emphasize that a bit more for generals, even while trying to excite the base by highlighting some of those initiatives that did get through.
Yeah, he's announced it is official, but does that actually mean it's completely locked in? Are there ever instances of people saying they're going to run, but then it doesn't happen for whatever circumstance that might be? And are there people floating around who would maybe still be thinking, well, there's a little bit of time going on here, let's see. But he kind of almost can't say no, because that would give the Republicans such a jump on him.
Yeah, I would say it's pretty official unless something were to happen to him or something like that. I don't see any serious Democratic challenger stepping up at this point. That usually tends to not go well for the party and any of the candidates involved. And I do think most Democrats, as perhaps unexcited as they are by Biden and many concerns about his age, which maybe we'll get to, they do think he is probably the best bet going into 2024, especially against Trump. So I do think that's where we are now with that. Again, some things could change, but I think we can assume that it will be Biden as the Democratic nominee.
On that age point, are quite legitimate questions about that being ignored because of who is asking them, because it feels like quite a mean-spirited right-wing talking point suggesting that he's, losing his faculties. But he is also objectively an old man. So why is that kind of been brushed under the carpet?
Yeah, I think the administration and Biden himself is going to have to engage with this question a little bit more directly. He's dodged it, downplayed it. Sometimes the White House has even said it's ageist to bring this up. And I really think going into this election, they have to address it head on. He needs to be straight with the American people. He always says, like, just watch me. And it's like, okay, like, everyone's watching now, so do talk to us about right, and like address some of this. So I think it has gotten past the point, and I think it's unfair just to put it as a right-wing talking point at this level. I mean, the reason that more than half of Democrats didn't want him to run was age. And so if you're facing that with even people who like your policies and approve what you're doing, you want to talk to them directly about that and what it means, and that you're aware of it, and not just brush it under the carpet, or I think do damage by suggesting it's just a right-wing talking point, because it's simply not anymore.
How is he more generally, how are things going for Biden at the moment? How does the landscape look for him?
Yeah, so his approval ratings keep staying right around this like 42-43%, which is quite low. But I would say that's a tough thing to look at now, just because they don't move that much in general these days. There's a lot of things going for him in terms of unemployment being very low, inflation seeming to be slowing and decreasing, though they're not as much as some would want. The economy, to me, will remain a big X factor. It's at a sort of a precarious point, and you can tell different stories about it depending on where you're sitting. So I think where that goes is going to be influential. On other issues, I think Democrats do have a slight upper hand. The GOP has gotten themselves a little bit into a corner with abortion. I think right now Democrats have a little bit more space maneuverability there that will be helpful going into 2024. And Biden himself right now, I think foreign policy-wise, has been leading well on Ukraine, though that is likely to become more of a wedge issue. And so I would say all things given, he's not at a bad place to be launching the campaign. But as we know, just so much can change between now and the election.
Away from these couple of issues, what are you finding most interesting in US politics right now?
Oh gosh, I feel like there's always so much going on. The nerdy side of me is following the debt ceiling debates, yeah, which I know is not super interesting to everyone.
But it's really impactful. So I do think it's something that's important to be brought up.
Yeah, and so this is the possibility that the U.S. could default by as early as June, which would send their economy and the whole global economy into real tumult and a real difficult time. So that is being kind of battled out right now. Speaker McCarthy and the Republicans just passed a bill last night that would extend the debt ceiling, but only in exchange for massive government cuts, which Biden is not in wanting to agree to. And moreover, there's just the principle of, should we even be negotiating on the debt ceiling at all? Like, that shouldn't be something that has strings attached.
It's also the last administration's debt, isn't it? It's this really strange thing that we've just spoken about how much the Democrats are spending, and I'm not denying that, but people seem to forget that Trump spent a lot of money as well.
Exactly right. So the debt ceiling is just paying for costs already incurred. So that includes things under Biden, but things from past administrations as well. So I would say everyone's kind of following that right now. The kind of the social issues that are always going on in the U.S. are, I think, important to keep an eye on going into 2024, yeah, including, LGBT and gender rights, as well as abortion. So those are all taking different kinds of moves. And a lot of stuff with the Supreme Court these days as well. So we're expecting some big rulings to come out in June on affirmative action and other cases, as well as some increasing kind of ethics issues around the court. So I would say all branches of government have something going on as usual. And with my hat, I'm always watching the U.S. foreign policy side of things, how the U.S. is engaging on the Russia-Ukraine question, but even more on China and some of our policies there. So a lot to be keeping an eye on.
Julie, thank you so much for joining me for the Bunker USA.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
Listeners, if you enjoyed this podcast, remember you can back us on Patreon so we can keep making them. There's a link in the show notes, or just search Bunker Patreon Podcast. This is Jacob Jarvis. Thank you for joining me for the Bunker USA.
The Bunker USA was written and presented by Managing Editor Jacob Jarvis. The producer is Chris Jones, with music and audio production by me, Jade Bailey. The group editor is Andrew Harrison. With artwork by James Parrott, The Bunker USA is a Podmasters production.